Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey, this is Elizabeth.
This is Keisha.
Hi, this is Leslie Sullivan, and welcome to the Mustard Seed Podcast.
We're back around the table. Thank you for joining us. Today we are going to continue our talks about the women of the Bible, and we're going to start with Leah. So, So Leah is Jacob's first wife and mother of 6 of the tribes of Israel.
So she got half of them.
She got half. She technically, I mean, if you want to count her slave is not the word I'm looking for here.
Technically was slave.
Yeah. Servant. She actually is the mother of 8.
Slave, yeah, I mean, it's both. I mean.
Yeah. It's like a slave is just a bad, it's just, you say it and everybody goes,
But it's listed that way in different versions of the Bible, both as servant and slave, so.
Yeah. Like, their whole dynamics reminds me of, what was that show? The Sister Wives.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. You know, it's just, it's just going to be drama and jealousy, bitterness.
I mean, their dad did not do them any favors. He set them, basically, he set them up to be on opposing teams. Like, he didn't. He didn't help that out at all.
And, you know. I mean, it. Of course, the Bible doesn't say anything about their growing up time or anything like that, but he really did that their whole life, though, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If he had no problems, you know, tricking one, marry the other, you know, it's just, it doesn't sound like good dad material.
No.
Well, and again, we got to think about the culture back then where, you know, women were... what's the right word? Commodity. Betrothed, but not with any knowledge of anything other than what you get with the woman. You know, like, so like she comes and she's got the sheep and the goats and the cows and the skins and the, you know, the eggs and the chicken. I mean, like you come with a, what is that called? I can't even think of the word.
Dowry.
Thank you.
You're welcome. See, this
you
is like historical romances, like literature. Yeah, that's what I read. So dowry.
So she comes with that dowry, and that sometimes seems like that's more important, at least in the culture of the Old Testament, when there's the arranged marriage or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes you get 2 cows and a chicken, yay, or, you know, whatever it is. So.
Yep. So this story starts in Genesis. So we're basically starting in Genesis 29 is when Leah and Rachel's story kind of starts, because it starts with Rachel. Mm-hmm. And we can touch on that when we talk about her. So timeline-wise, this is looking at the middle Bronze Age, like the 2000 to 1800 BC. Leah is obviously she is the eldest sister, the firstborn. she is described having her physical features aren't really described as lovely. She has weak and tender eyes. Weak or tender eyes, depending on your translation.
Yeah. My NLT translation says there was no sparkle in Leah's eyes.
So she could have been really pretty. She just didn't have life behind her eyes. And apparently that's important.
Yep.
But I did read something and I thought it was interesting where, so you have Rebecca's brother, right? And he has these two daughters. She has two sons. So it was likely understood that they would kind of, that was their prospects. You know, that it would have always been like Esau with Leah and Jacob with Rachel. So that was kind of a thought. But then, you know, when you read back and see how Esau is described and the things that he does and the things that he, you know, kind of the way he acts, it could have, like they said that her eyes could have been sorrowful because she knew that might have been for her.
Yeah.
So though she maybe dodged a bullet because he ended up marrying, you know, a Canaanite, she still is kind of like, now what? You know, I didn't really want that because I don't want to be tethered to that my whole life. But now what? Because who's going to want me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I read, too, that she could have also maybe been, you know, just didn't have the best eyesight. So she was.
I've read that too, where they feel like she might have had, not a stigmatism, but you know,
like a lazy eye.
Yes, and that caused her to not maybe look as pretty or not have that appearance of connecting with people like we think of with eyes. Do you know what I mean? Like when I read that, she didn't have the sparkle in her eyes, and I think it is life. And she also knew that she was being promised and had no say, and maybe she just didn't like that because she was independent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But think because of they didn't know how to describe physical issues back then,
right?
Came across that way too.
And there probably wasn't like, even a name for it.
Well, even today some people call like a lazy eye a weak eye.
So obviously Jacob makes a pact to marry her sister, you know, marry Rachel. So he works 7 years for her. And then on the wedding night, Rachel isn't who he was provided. Which I think every woman in the room and within listening distance can be like, really? How deep was his love for her? Because if he couldn't tell that wasn't Rachel that walked through the door in the evening, veil or no veil, you know.
I was wondering too, like, you know, it's a wedding celebration, so I kind of wonder if he got a little drunk. And so he wasn't really aware until the next day, because it was the next morning
when it was light.
So, and can you imagine that be your wedding night, you know, and then the next day, like, I didn't want to marry you.
And did they not talk? I mean, my thing. Like, did she not utter a single word the whole night?
Well, and then it makes you wonder, did their voices sound any different? Did they not? Like, what, you know, because the other thing we don't quite know, because I looked this up, but I couldn't find it, is the exact age difference between the two of them.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't.
Like,
find
are they
anything.
Just a year apart? Do they look like twins? You know, I mean, like, do they have like that kind of I mean, that's also probably why they stormed each other, because they were so close.
Maybe they were twins. They didn't say, but they could have been.
Well, but even like the Irish twin thing, the 13-month apart, or the like that kind of thing, just super close in age. Mm-hmm. Concept also, I think, would set off that rivalry stuff that comes up with the two of them. You know, that kind of stuff, you know, as you look later on into everything, but maybe they had similar voices, or maybe they didn't talk at all because there was just this like, awareness that, I mean, Leah had to know that he thought he was with Rachel, and Maybe Dad said, "Be silent and get it done," or something. I don't know. You know, like,
right.
You know, the silencing of their voices could have not come from either of them, but from Dad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of supposition. I'm just saying, like, it's so hard to imagine them not picking up on that it wasn't.
And I wonder, Rachel, too, how much connection Jacob and Rachel had during the 7 years. You know, he could have just kept them apart. Like, do this, and then you come, you know?
True. So he didn't have a familiarity with maybe her voice or her mannerisms or, anything. Yeah. Yeah. It's all that conjecture that we just don't know because the story's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had read that where they didn't, it's possible that they didn't really have a lot of interaction. He just thought she was beautiful and he felt the connection. But yet, you know, when he met Rachel at the beginning, like he was up and he was close to her at that point.
Yeah.
I guess, but I don't know. You don't, there is a lot. And, you know, it makes you, some people, when you're reading, like I read a few books or, you know, snippets on it. Some people paint Leah in a, like a very not really forgiving light, like saying like she was part of the deception, which she was. I'm not saying she wasn't.
Yeah.
But I had one author say, you know, did she really even know? Like, did she understand that it actually wasn't her that Jacob was working for? You know, had the dad already thought this through, you know, and so he knew that he would have to give up, he would give Jacob Leah regardless of whatever pact they already had. So was he already telling her, oh, no, he's going to marry you? And so she maybe assumed that that was how it was supposed to be because she was the first.
Yeah. And she didn't have much of a voice either.
No.
I mean, she kind of had to do what her dad told her to do.
I feel like he was not the best.
Yeah.
Dad. Yeah. You know, I agree. It didn't sound like her mother's around either.
He calculated the whole situation, obviously, to get both of his daughters married off and you know, get the most riches out of it. And whether he included Leah per se in the deception or not, I think he had the plan from the second he met Jacob.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if she knew about it, going in, like, you know, you have a veil on your, he wants this sister, but I'm giving him you, you know, going into that, knowing that he doesn't really want you. And then, you know, that's kind of a emotional period for a woman anytime, you know, it's.
Well, and she didn't have a say because that's also the cult.
Yeah.
Back then that women weren't allowed to choose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything until they became like the head wife of the, of the harem or the.
Yeah. Right.
That or the, you know, the number one or the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Or they were only in control in their tent in the big grouping of everything. Like, that's, I mean, from the little bit of research I did on that kind of stuff, you were in charge of your family only, not the whole family.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
The only other thought I had in regards to him not fully realizing it was this, because of kind of the way God uses the situation later, was it part, not really part of God's plan? Because you don't ever want to think that God would cause Leah to have to feel that rejection and to feel like to go through what she's going through. But did he like harden Jacob's heart or had like blind, like his eyes, like cover like his own eyes to kind of keep, you know, just to, I don't know, just to allow that to happen just so that way things still progress in the way that they did.
Yeah. You know, he can use a bad situation for good. And
does it all the time,
Yeah.
And he has, you know, the ultimate knowledge of what's going to happen and, you know, who Leah is going to be the great, great, great whatever to Jesus.
Yep.
So she's in the direct line.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, God blessed her with, you know, an abundance of children and the thing she was probably craving most was just connection. And we know God's not a zapper God going up there and going, oh, yeah, we'll make that happen so that happens so that happens. But he also doesn't step in the, like, either side of it, whether to make it happen or not let it happen. Mm-hmm. He's up there going, all right, because there's a little bit of free will in our life too that we're in charge of. So
yeah,
and that's the dad part, right? You know, to that point, is that dad, even if God had made the plan clear to dad, dad also said, nope, I like this idea better.
Right.
This is how I'm getting my daughters married off. So,
you know, and it's, well, it's still the same, like you took it, Sarah and Hagar, you know, Sarah mm-hmm. took things into her own hands and God still, he used it.
Yeah.
You know, it was used and he dealt with it because God's going to deal with it. Obviously he gives us free will, but you know, he's going to use this situation. And then he almost redeems Leah by having, you know, that come, like by having Jesus come, like his son come from her line.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that way, you know, so she's then glorified.
Yep.
Even though a lot.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
A lot of them, I feel like they talk about Rachel more than they talk about Leah. Like if you go through Jewish traditions, it's a lot about Rachel.
Yeah.
And I'm like.
But, and she, you know, she's mentioned in Matthew when you talk about
Leah.
It's not Rachel.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you kind of, I mean, I just want, you know, I do wonder. If she didn't know, right? Like, if her dad had deceived her too, in regards to providing her, how did that, like, his reaction in the morning? That is not how you want the night after your wedding to go.
I just feel so bad for her because that's hard, you know, to have that bitterness in your heart to start to build up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like how it does say in like 29 and it's verse 31, it says, you know, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was unable to conceive. So he had compassion, you know, for Leah.
Yep.
He had, you know, he saw that the decision of her father was causing her to not be completely fulfilled in a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, so he blessed her with a lot of sons, you know.
Well, and the hard part is, you know, Leah, as soon as she got pregnant and realized that, you know, she immediately thought that having the children would obviously make her love mm-hmm. Jacob. And unfortunately it didn't equate, but at least she did have the love of her children to mm-hmm. Help that gap not feel as wide, but that to me is a little bit of the harder part of the story, is that you know, as women we always hope that whatever that next step is that we take, that that's going to lead us to that place of happiness and mm-hmm. You know, things like that, if we're, you know, for whatever part of the journey you're on in life, that you're, you know, you're always trying to strive to find that next thing that helps either your family or you connect closer to God and connect closer to others, right? Mm-hmm. And so for her, when she got pregnant, she was like, ah, yes, there's no way he won't love me now. And it's a gentle reminder, well, at least a gentle reminder to me, to say I need to look for my happiness and my hope in him, in Jesus, and not in not in the things that were the people of this world, even though I have an amazing husband, and and I'm blessed by that. You know, it's that's a blessing. But at the end of the day, the assurance is that God loves me no matter what. So
yeah,
yeah.
And I do. I love that she does. She says she thanks God for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But Leah thanks God. Like, she's like, thank you. You saw my affliction, and you blessed me. You know, so it's like, it's an immediate, I know who caused this. And I know, you know, it's like, he sees I'm being faithful. I'm doing what the men in my life have told me to do. I'm, you know, I'm here, you know, and you know, and it just shows that it just shows what kind of God we serve.
Yeah.
That he still sees the women. And then in the Old Testament, you know, we're looking at women in the Old Testament where in any other, in this culture alone, they shouldn't have even been in here. You know, they don't, women weren't glorified. Like, their words didn't matter, but God is making sure her words were heard for years, you know, after she spoke them.
Yeah.
Because it's important.
Yeah. And that's the one constant in a few of the like commentaries I looked up, is that God constantly tries to show both Leah and Rachel how loved they are, even though they both accepted love in different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And so you have, and I know we're going to touch on this when we talk on Rachel, but I feel like you have to talk. I mean, we have the rivalry, you know, so it's like the battle of the kids, right? So Leah has one, two.
She has the four.
Four. Is it four before Rachel gives? And then, so then Rachel gives her servant just so that way she can be on the same level.
And then
Leah gives her servant.
Because she can't. They can't outdo each other.
Yep.
Yeah. No, you go. No, I'll go. No, you go. No, I go.
And then, you know, he's just like, okay.
Right. Sure.
It's almost like he's just following whatever the women say at this point, you know? I'll go to whatever room, whatever tent, you know, you're telling me to go to.
Write me out a schedule, please.
Who am I with tonight? This is where it really feels like sister wives.
Anyways, yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's a whole nother topic.
That's a whole
other topic. That is going to be the, later.
But, you know, us as women, we're a jealous lot. We just are. That's mm-hmm. how we are. And just to have that constantly above you, you have to think, you know, every time he's with the other one's thinking, what's he doing? Why is he not here? Why, you know, it's just, and especially in Leah's case, because she knows he loves Rachel more than her.
Yeah. So even if they're not doing things, he's just laying with her, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I can see her just constantly thinking and judging herself and comparing herself and, you know, all the things that us women are very good at doing.
Yeah.
It would be.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. I was just saying, just I think it's like watching a really bad tennis match, right? Like, or a ping pong match or whatever, where it's just like, well, here you go. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. And how do we continually... I don't know. Like, I mean, I have two older sisters. I'm not saying we didn't have rivalry moments, but I can't imagine it going to this level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just can't. But I was also the baby. Maybe that's why. I don't know.
I have one younger sister and I don't feel like we would get like that. I mean, this is not as adults. I mean, again, we don't know how old they are.
Yeah.
You know, and I know
we
usually
don't know what their childhood was, but
Yeah. And it makes me wonder how old they are, because when he first saw Rachel, then it's 7 years has gone by.
That's a good point.
So, I mean,
Well, if they're anything of the Mary variety, you know, she was like 14-ish or maybe younger, maybe a little older, like on either side of that.
Uh-huh.
And that was pretty common when you look at like cultural stuff back then, was that 14, 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they were only 21 when this was all going on, or 22. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been early 20s where you're definitely like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The hormones are raging.
Well, you're in college. Yeah, you know.
And you're so competitive at that age because you don't have the experience to say, I don't need to do that. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, you know, like making this servant sleep with him that day. And then, you know, I mean, just all the back and forth of backstabbing in totally different ways each time.
Yeah.
I just think the older you get, you go, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So. You know, kind of unlike Sarah and Hagar, they don't seem to be really jealous of the servants. It's just it's adding to their score.
Oops. Yeah.
Those are my kids. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like they're their confidants who help them in the fight or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
because it's amazing how quickly they just keep sending the servants there when they don't get pregnant.
Yeah.
So.
It's like, oh, I had my cycle, so your turn.
You're next.
You know, and then that brings back, you know, back to the whole, when we talked about Sarah, you know, how she sat there and like Rachel kind of had that situation to where she had every month she got to go visit the tent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes she was alone. It sounds like the way everything was working out, she was alone a lot in that, you know. So, you know, for her to finally at some point, you know, have that. But for... So you feel for her, I guess, on that end too. But, you know, Leo's probably over there going, sorry.
You're not going to see me in that tent for 9 months.
You're right. I just, you know, it's hard because the way the story rolls, it doesn't make Leo look like a good person. It doesn't, you know, she's not really explained really well. I don't feel like, I mean, her voice is still heard, but
I don't think either of them are very explained as well. Because even Rachel at points seems like the selfish younger sister.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm not, and it all might be true in that concept, but I just feel like even though there's this statement of that God loves them no matter how they're acting or what they're doing to each other, that he is constant in their life and he's trying to help them find maybe that common ground. I don't, you know, I mean, that's why he keeps putting them in situations to talk and be in each other's faces to a point. But I don't know that either one of them, at least in the early part of the story, are painted in a light that helps you go, feels like you brought some of it on yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one point in the story, you know, Leah's son, her first son, finds the mandrake. Then it's like the importance of the competition, who's gonna have the most kids. It's the most important, because then they're bartering, well, if you give me that, then you can have an extra night with them, you know. And it's just like, what's important to you at this point? It's kind of maybe not the man, maybe it's just the competition.
I think the one thing that I felt like we could learn from Leah in her life, that we can, from the little bits that we see in how she was treated, and, you know, even how she's still treated in the way that, you know, people have talked about her, and how, you know, we kind of just, either you're team Leah or you're like, no, she was terrible. Like, there's no really, not a middle ground, but the fact of the matter is, you know, it's a reminder that we're seen. She did what she was supposed to do. I do question the providing her servant, but I also know that that's cultural. You know, we've seen it before. However, her motives weren't as pure maybe as Rachel's in that aspect. because it was Rachel's duty to do that because she couldn't provide one. And like, just like it was Sarah's kind of duty that for that culture and that time. Leah was maybe a little vindictive at that point. But, you know, yeah. But again, we see God use her story, use her lineage to provide his redemption for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're still seeing that regardless of what the situation that you're in, regardless of, you know, what's going on and how you feel about where you are, God can still use that. And you might not see it. Mm-hmm. You know, she can see it. If the Lord, you know, shows her. I'm sure she knows now, obviously, what came from her affliction. She redeemed the world, you know, from her dad's deceit, you know, he redeemed the world.
Yeah.
You know.
And it just shows the ultimate plan throughout the whole thing, everything, the whole Bible, it all points back to Jesus, you know, and, you know, as you read it and stuff, you don't really see that connection, but it does if it went from them, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's going to wrap up our little discussion on Leah. Let us know what you guys think. We're on, you know, connect with us on Facebook, ask questions. Tell us what you guys want to hear. Put in your two cents. That's the whole point. If you guys were talking back to us while we sat here, you know, then tell us, put it on the, you know, where we post the episodes right there. Like, hey, this is what I thought. This is what I heard. I mean, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Obviously we're here. So some of you see us in person, some of you don't, but you know, reach out, let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook too if you don't want to post it. I know I'm not always, I like to hide behind this mic. It's nice. But we will see you guys next time.